Uncle Sam getting out of the insurance business.
And we'll tell you more about the biggest merger you've probably never heard of. Hello, I'm Jeff Horwich.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Monday, September 10th. Today, the federal government announced it would sell off another chunk of its stake in American International Group. It essentially bought the company back in 2008 when it was bailing AIG out. Now its stake is down around 20%.
And that merger I mentioned involves the global mining conglomerate called Xstrata. It's looking like the biggest global merger of the year, which is why we are going to update you on it. And we're going to talk about what business Toys R Us has making a tablet computer. It's coming up and a bunch more along with it on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
4 years ago, at the height of the financial crisis, the Treasury Department bailed out insurance giant American International Group, AIG. It essentially bought the company for about $143 billion.
Now the government is selling off part of its stake in AIG, $18 billion worth of company stock. Joining me now to talk about this is Jim Milstein. He ran AIG's restructuring for the Treasury. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Daisy. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Jim, give us a sense of the trajectory of AIG from when it collapsed in 2008 to right now.
Well, it's been a long, tortured path, but in September of 2008, they became the beneficiary of a $85 billion loan from the Federal Reserve, the largest loan in recorded human history. And that loan was used by them in order to meet their really extreme liquidity needs. But that proved to be just the first of many cash needs and cash infusions from the government. But by the time I got to the Treasury Department in 2009, the financial system had started to stabilize. And then the real question that we had to face was, how do we get our money back?
Right. The Treasury Department essentially ended up buying the company. I mean, with this sale, from what I understand, the Treasury Department will be down to more like a 20% stake. But the government has made money selling off shares of this company, right?
Yes, I think when you add up all of the interest and fees and profit that the Federal Reserve made, as well as the profit the Treasury Department's going to make on the common stock it owns, the government of the United States, having invested about $143 billion, probably will have ended up making $20 billion or so for the taxpayers.
Well, what's next for AIG?
Well, I think like many of the other TARP recipients who've paid back all of what they owe to the government, they're now free to pursue an agenda set for them, not by the government, but by their board of directors and by their shareholders. So, AIG is a smaller company, a more manageable company, a less risky company today than it was when it first knocked on the Federal Reserve's door seeking help. So I think it may still be big, but it's not too big to fail anymore.
Will the government completely get out of AIG, or will it continue to hold a small stake?
No, I think my former colleagues at the Treasury Department haven't changed the views that they had when I was there, which was that, these were intended to be temporary investments and making a profit is a nice thing. But, the government owning large stakes in large companies is not what most Americans expect of their government. And so I expect they'll sell off whatever they have after this offering is concluded as fast as possible.
Jim Milstein ran AIG's restructuring for the Treasury. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Clicking over here, take a quick look at the stock markets at this hour. Stacey, looks like not too much happening in Europe. A bit of a down day overall. The Europe-wide Stock 600 index down about 0.3%. U.S.
Yeah.
Markets starting out down as well, aren't they? The S&P down just a little, almost 0.1%. The Dow down also 0.1%. Trade data out of China is likely weighing on the market somewhat. Chinese imports fell in August. That's never a sign of a healthy economy. And exports grew less than 3% as demand for Chinese stuff fell in other parts of the world. This is interesting. We've been charting this from month to month. New fundraising totals this morning show President Obama topped Mitt Romney for campaign fundraising in August. Romney had been topping Obama every month since May through the summer. And did you go to the movies this weekend, Stacey, by any chance?
I didn't, no.
Well, you were not alone. It was the lowest grossing box office weekend of the year so far. One of the worst weekends for the industry in a decade. No film made more than $10 million this weekend, which almost never happens.
Wow. Well, the weather was really nice here. Maybe that was why.
Certainly the weather could be a big part of it, yeah.
Well, Jeff, you may not have heard of Glencore and Xstrata, but you probably use their products every day. Xstrata is one of the world's biggest mining companies, and Glencore trades in all things mined and farmed. Glencore is trying to buy Xstrata in a $36 billion bid, and it would be the biggest merger of the year. Former British Prime Minister Tony Blair has actually been involved in the negotiations and reportedly reaped a pretty tidy sum. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has that story.
More about Tony Blair in a minute, but here's the deal. Glencore is the world's biggest commodities trader. It wants to merge with Xstrata, which mines a wide range of industrial metals like copper and also coal. Together, they'd create the world's fourth biggest miner. Critics say this could lead to higher metal prices, but shareholders in Xstrata were not happy with the merger either. Analyst Rupert Nathan.
Glencore is still picking up this company very much on the cheap. When their new project pipeline is rolled out over the next couple of years, their earnings should increase at least threefold.
A key Middle Eastern investor has been holding out for a better deal, and this is where Tony Blair comes in, thanks to his excellent contacts as a Middle East peace envoy. After 3 hours of talks on Friday, Blair helped extract an improved offer for Xstrata shareholders. Sources close to the former prime minister insist he didn't get $1 million for his pains. It was closer to $250,000. And the money will be ploughed into one of his charitable foundations. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Well, Congress, Stacey, is meandering back from its summer vacation today.
I'm so lucky. I wish we had a summer vacation.
Well, apparently the vacation kind of continues. We're told not to expect much action on Capitol Hill in the coming weeks. In fact, we should expect lawmakers to do the bare minimum as they wait for the outcome of the elections in November. That does not mean that they don't have a whole lot on their plates, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
A few years back, Congress designated September as National Pain Awareness Month. But it looks like lawmakers will be oblivious to pain this month, dodging agonizing decisions like how to avoid the fiscal cliff of expiring tax breaks and automatic spending cuts. Harry Holzer teaches public policy at Georgetown. He says Congress will dawdle, perhaps even during its lame duck session after the election.
So even once you're in the lame duck, the progress might be slow until they get very close to the cliff, or maybe even after January 1st when they start to drive over it.
But there are a few things Congress needs to get done in the 13 days it'll be in session before the election. The Farm Bill expires September 30th. Norm Ornstein is a policy analyst at the American Enterprise Institute. He says there are some political incentives for House Republicans.
You've got a lot of people in farm areas who have tended in the past to vote Republican.
But Ornstein says Congress will probably just agree to short-term drought relief and drag its heels on a full-blown farm bill. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
So, Jeff, apparently Generation Z has a rude awakening coming to it in like 50 years or so.
What is Generation Z?
It's actually the first I've heard of them, too. Apparently they are the people who are ages 13 to 22.
Okay.
You might not have met them because I think they're all on their phones all the time, but they do exist.
What generation is next? That's what I want to know. Do we circle around and go to Generation AA?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I guess anyway, the AA generation. A lot of batteries.
I'm sure that's not the point of what you have to tell me, so go on.
Well, it's very interesting. So a study from a TD Ameritrade, they sought out Generation Zers, and they found that about 40% of them aren't planning to save for retirement. The reason is very interesting. Apparently, they think they're going to get enough inheritance from their parents to sustain them through their golden years.
I would say the reason is that they're 13.
Yeah, okay, that is
really
true, actually.
About saving for retirement, but...
Yeah, unless you're a very serious 13-year-old. Actually, though, their parents have very different thoughts on the subject. Apparently, only 16% of them say they expect to provide any inheritance at all.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
This afternoon, we'll get new data from the Federal Reserve on Americans' consumer borrowing habits. In recent months, Americans have borrowed trillions to pay for cars and college. From Washington, here's Marketplace's David Gura.
After the financial crisis, many Americans reevaluated their relationships with credit. They got more conservative and they started paying down credit cards. Christopher Thornburg is with Beacon Economics.
If you look at delinquency rates on non-mortgage consumer debt, they're near record low levels.
Default rates have dropped, but economists are worried about another kind of debt that continues to grow, student loan debt. Americans owe more money to student loan lenders than they owe credit card companies. Robert Manning is the president of the Responsible Debt Relief Research Institute, and he says student loan debt is starting to affect the jobs market.
And it's actually created some competitive disadvantages for Americans who have high student loans and can't take certain jobs.
And Manning says there's talk of reforming consumer bankruptcy laws to include student loan debt, which, according to some economists, looks eerily like subprime mortgage debt did just a couple of years ago. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
A new entrant in the tablet computer wars brings nothing to the fight if not youthful vigor. Toys R Us today is expected to announce the Tabio, a new Toys R Us tablet for kids. It'll come preloaded with 50 apps. It's Wi-Fi enabled. And you can only get it at Toys R Us or ToysRUs.com. James McQuivy is an analyst with Forrester Research. Good to talk with you.
Yeah, great to be here. Thank you.
For Toys R Us, this seems like a lot of work. Why would they want to build their own tablet instead of just selling tablets made by other companies?
You know, times are very hard for retailers. They are struggling to compete with internet entrants like Amazon, obviously, but there's hundreds of others that are making it possible for you to walk into a Toys R Us or a Barnes & Noble, which is another company in a similar situation, look around, test the products, and then pull out your mobile phone and buy it online at a lower price. And so what they want to do is lock the customer into their platform. And that's what these proprietary tablets, whether we're talking about the Tabio at Toys R Us or the Nook at Barnes & Noble, that's what they're intended to do. It's a store in your pocket.
At least for Barnes & Noble, it's been a somewhat successful strategy. People are attached to their Nook tablets. How about for Toys R Us? Is this likely to work?
This is a much more challenging thing than selling a few books on a Nook tablet. When you're in the toy business, toys are available everywhere. You don't really think of one particular brand as being the source of toys the way you think of, say, a Barnes & Noble being your source for books. So it's a harder relationship to build overall, and that's one of the reasons the store is struggling. But then making a tablet the physical evidence of your relationship with that store, especially when the kids have it in their hands as opposed to the parents who are the ones who are spending the money, this just feels like a harder thing to make happen than even Barnes & Noble's job.
Seeing this story this morning made me think about Toys R Us's slogan, right? I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. So what is this thing with tablet computers and kids? What are these things that parents are putting in their children's hands?
You know, it turns out that even though people have thought for a long time that no one would put a $700 device in their children's hands, a lot of parents have been babysitting their children with their iPads. And you look at what Amazon recently announced with their new Kindle Fire. They have a kid dashboard so that parents can control how the tablet is being used. I'm sure Apple will do the same. That's what Toys R Us is trying to say is, hey, if you use our tablet, not only is it cheaper, it's designed for kids to be holding on to it, but we're going to have parental controls on it. All of these are not trying to lead the market. They're following the market. The consumer has already shown that they're willing to give these devices to their children. I think Toys R Us wants to get there before it's too late, before their hands are already full of an Apple or Amazon product.
James McQuivy with Forrester Research. Good to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Jeff, can you guess what America's smallest state capital is? Little Monday trivia.
Helena, Montana.
Oh, that's a really good guess. Actually, it is Montpelier, Vermont.
Okay.
That's also apparently one of the coldest state capitals. And it's getting into the utility business. It plans to start selling heat that it's generating in a wood-fired plant to local businesses. Vermont Public Radio's Kirk Carapeza has that story for us.
This capital city is small. Just 8,000 people live here. But it has a big plan to address its energy future.
This is not rocket science.
Montpelier Mayor John Holler says the idea is to expand a wood-fired heating plant that's been serving the statehouse since the 1940s. Pipes will run under these downtown streets to carry heat and hot water to public and private buildings. The fuel will be local Vermont timber. The cost? $20 million.
Our country's been founded on municipal investments, and I don't see this project as markedly different than other municipal investments.
But there are skeptics, including City Councilor Tom Galanka. He supported the plan, but only after it was modified to be phased in, because otherwise, he says,
we will be left holding this huge bill in infrastructure costs and the bond debt that we'd incur, and we wouldn't have the revenue streams to support it.
One building that could benefit is the Union Elementary School. It burns more than 60,000 gallons of heating oil each year. Sitting outside the school on a picnic bench, lobbyist Liz Edsel says if Montpelier wants to reduce its carbon footprint, district heating makes sense.
Both for the environment and the economy. It's something that Vermonters are wanting to see local action on and not just leave it to the state or not just leave it in the hands of the energy companies.
Montpelier city officials expect part of downtown to be served by the new heating system about a year from now. It'll be just the third such district in North America after St. Paul, Minnesota, and Charlottetown on Prince Edward Island. I'm Kirk Carapeza for Marketplace.
And finally, Stacey, from the country's smallest state capital to the country's smallest state, I guess.
Oh.
Isn't that nifty?
Yes.
We're going to go to Rhode Island here for a quick item about a man and his cockatoo who are in court. Not the cockatoo, I guess, technically, but they're charged with violating a noise ordinance in their neighborhood.
Oh.
And here's the story. See, the man is recently divorced, and he's got a new girlfriend who just moved in.
Oh.
But before his ex-wife left, she allegedly taught the bird to call the new girlfriend some pretty colorful names.
That's
over
so
and over
great.
And over. Very loudly, apparently, since they're violating a noise ordinance. And she also taught the bird, reportedly, to throw rocks and threaten bodily harm to the new girlfriend's cat.
That, I have to admit, as revenge goes, this pretty, I mean, it's so clever.
Well done. Polly want a restraining order? That's all I have to say to that. I'm Jeff Horowitz.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.